Well, hello everyone, and welcome to episode 12 of A Large Old Cup. My name is Corey, and you're here with me now, or maybe I should say hello, good groovers. This is a very late night edition of The Large Old Cup. The spirit of this felt right, because I've quite literally returned from Fritz the Night Owl's presents Friday the 13th on Friday the 13th, and it is now almost 1:30 in the morning on Saturday the 14th. So I have been awake minus two kind of brief naps since 5 o'clock, and I will be waking up again at 5 o'clock because I have a cat with special diabetic needs and another cat who is a little under the weather as well, because my life is nothing but sick cats anymore. Regardless, so for those, I may have talked about Fritz the Night Owl previously, but from in the 1970s and the 1980s in Columbus, Ohio, where I live, we had our own late night movie monster, movie host, kind of akin to Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, or Svengoolie. Ours was Fritz the Night Owl, who was a creature, man primarily, with very identifiable large sunglasses that had little horns on them. And Fritz lived on top of the radio tower of the local channel, which I think I can see the radio tower from where I currently live. And late night Saturdays, he would host basically the movie of the night. So like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. And about in 2010, he was this local filmmaker who grew up watching him, contacted him and brought him back, because Fritz like won like 7 Emmys for Night Owl Theater. So back in 2010, they started getting together and recording basically new episodes of Night Owl Theater. Now, previously in the 70s and 80s, the Night Owl Theater movies were like the kind of stuff that you could get for cheap or for free that you could air. And, you know, so it'd be some movie, maybe something by like Roger Corman, and Fritz would do some incidental little bits and information between the movie breaks. So the movie would go to commercial, and, you know, a scene from the movie would play, and then Fritz would be there superimposed into the background or replacing one of the actors, and he'd be there to give you some sort of a factoid and crack some jokes about, you know, the movie or the actors or what have you. So in 2010, when they brought this project back, they widened the scope and started to do larger movies. So tonight was my 5th ever Night Owl Theater. I really should have been attending more of these, and I'm going to go back and start visiting them more frequently just because of how much I enjoy the experience. But so the 5 movies that I have seen Alien, Nightmare on Elm Street, Beetlejuice, Little Shop of Horrors, and tonight was Friday the 13th, the OG with Betsy Palmer as Mrs. Voorhees. And it's sort of the same deal. They would play the movie, and then after a little bit of time, the movie would fade out, and then a scene would replay, and then Fitz would be there superimposed to give you some sort of fact about the movie or the actors or the special effects. Like, he talked about, you know, Tom Savini working on this movie and the career he went on to have. He talked about Betsy Palmer and the career she had and all of the greats that she worked with, and, you know, the story of how she came to be in Friday the 13th, which was basically she just needed the $1,000 to buy a car and figured no one was going to see that movie and thought it was garbage. Ever since then, she's a regular, apparently, on the horror movie convention circuits, and she has a lot of joy because it, you know, it opened her career up to a lot of people who would not have otherwise seen her. I enjoy Night Owl Theater because it is so relaxed and funny. Like, you can laugh at stuff that you're not supposed to laugh at, like For example, in the movie, there's Ralph, who is the Harbinger of Doom character, the town drunk who informs all of the campers, "You're doomed. You go to the camp, you're doomed. Doomed. God sent me to tell you that you're doomed." And, like, there's a scene where he gets on his bike and rides away, and the camera just stays on him for way too long. And it's like, Jesus Christ, like, you can cut any second now, guys. So it's just, like, awkward laughter and shit like that. It's just, it's very fun. And, you know, Fritz used to attend these in person, but Fritz is 88, 89, something years old now. So, you know, he still seems to be in great health. He still has his very deep voice and his comedic timing. But, you know, he doesn't need to be coming out on a random Friday at 11 o'clock at night for a horror movie, you know? So, you know, and before the movies, they show, like, film clips and old clips of Fritz's show. And they show, like, the news when they would come and they'd interview him and talk to him about his career and stuff. And it's just really nice. I ended up buying a Fritz the Night Owl t-shirt from the producer, director, you know, the person responsible for bringing this all back. And I found out that on October 12th at midnight, they're going to start a 12-hour horror movie marathon at the Studio 35, which is the place that I went to see this. That's going to start at midnight, and it's going to go to noon the next day. And, like, some of the movies that they're going to be showing is, like, Return of the Living Dead and Deathgasm and the 1980s Trick or Treat movie and two mystery movies and Lost Boys. And, like, that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun and a lot of, like, just enjoyment in that. And they also said Fritz is going to be kind of, he's going to be the host slash narrator, and you'd hear his voice kind of introducing the movies and what have you. It's one of those reasons I kind of fell in love with living in Columbus, because it has such a unique identity, and I really do like it here because you get these, like, fun local characters like Fritz the Night Owl, you know. he seems like a very lovely guy who's just been doing his work this whole time, and yeah, so. As I was watching Friday the 13th, not the first time I've seen this movie. I think the first time I saw Friday the 13th, I was like 5 or 6 years old. Because I think I told the story that I shared a bedroom with my brother, who was 15 years older than I was, and he had HBO on the TV in his room, and I would, like, watch all of these horror movies and stuff. So I've seen a lot of these movies already. And, like, some of the information that is with them is fun and great, but I really go just for that kind of experience because I have always enjoyed horror. I've always enjoyed monsters. But I don't like serious, scary stuff, I guess. It's so strange. I like to go to horror movies and watch horror movies, but I don't want to be scared necessarily. And I was sitting there kind of watching, you know, a camp counselor just catch an axe with the middle of her face, which isn't the ideal way to catch an axe, I'm sure. You know, I got to kind of thinking, like, why do I enjoy this so much? You know, like, why am I having fun with this? And I think the simplest answer is that it kind of trivializes death. You know, like, in these movies, very rarely do they establish characters that you really like and that you want to see survive. Very rarely. Like, even in the horror movies where you know, like, and every horror movie has the last girl, you know? The girl who's, like, she's got her morals about her, she's got future aspirations, she's not smoking pot and having sex and drinking alcohol, like, you know, she's the uptight one, but, like, you know, that's just people bullying her. Like, it's, you know, that whole motif and stereotype. Even then, those characters you don't necessarily really root for, you know. To me, the attraction of all of like, the 1980s slasher movies in particular is just, like, you're going to go see some people get fucked up. And there's something enjoyable sometimes about seeing somebody get fucked up. I don't know what it is. Maybe, like I said, maybe it's that trivializing death because death is fucking scary and it's permanent. And when you see, like, it handled in such a over-the-top manner and very laissez-faire with bright-colored red blood and, you know, what have you. It just makes the whole thing seem funny. And what do we do if we don't laugh at death every now and then, you know? So I got to the theater at about 10:30, and there was a gentleman outside dressed as Jason Voorhees, holding a sign that says Happy Friday the 13th, and it's on the big marquee, Fritz Presents Friday the 13th. Very cool. And the atmosphere is very, like I said, the atmosphere is very chill. I like Studio 35. It's a small independent theater. The movie tickets are never that expensive, especially when you compare them to, like, going to other places, right? So, it's a two-screen theater. I've never even seen the second screen, and I've been here for 10 years. But, you know, the inside, they decorated up to be all Beetlejuice-themed because of, you know, Beetlejuice just came out. And it just feels very appropriate because October is right around the corner, and we're all excited for that. We're all spooky kids, and we all enjoy that shit. And, you know, it's crowded and kind of small, but it's just everybody there is weird. You know, like, who else on a Friday night at 11 o'clock is piling into the small independent theater to see a man who's an icon of Columbus, Ohio from the 70s and 80s basically crack jokes and give information about a movie that's 40 years old, you know? It's you see a lot of really cool, unique tattoos. You see a lot of black t-shirts. You see a lot of alternative folks, and it's a good time. To kind of combine my two loves of, like, of these kind of cool niche. I pronounced that word incorrectly, which is awesome. To go 37 years of your life and be told it's not niche, it's niche. Great, thanks. I could have used that heads up a while ago. Anyway, that combination of, like, local alternative weird culture mixed with my love of comic books. Apparently Fritz the Night Owl was in DC Comics Power of Shazam in like 5 issues, where it was like Superman and Shazam teaming up and they had to go on the air with Fritz the Night Owl. I didn't know this existed. So it's like a trinity was combined in that moment of discovery for me. It was weird alternative culture plus comic books plus Superman. And that's like perfect. Perfect. It's absolutely perfect. So yeah, the movie started at 11 and it was just a good time, you know. Watched the entire duration of the movie. None of the jokes that Fritz made were poking fun at the movie itself. You know, a lot of it was just sort of cracking wise. And there's nothing wrong with cracking wise. There's one scene in particular. So the scene where Kevin Bacon, Kevin Bacon got a little tidbit from Fritz by himself, considering, you know, he's the largest star that came out of that movie. You know, this is pre-Footloose and stuff. We had as he was kind of talking about, like, Kevin Bacon's career and how he started, his trajectory, his side project, he plays music with his brother called the Bacon Brothers, which, you know, we're not going to give you points for creativity on that one, Kevin. But he's going through all these facts about Kevin Bacon, and the way that they have illustrated it is, in the scene, Kevin Bacon's character and his girlfriend are in the midst of having sex in a bunk bed on the lower bunk. And the camera slowly pans up and you see their friend who has had his throat slit and his dead body is on the top bunk. And they have no idea that that's happened. And that, unintentional or not, that character did seem like a third wheel character. And he was always kind of bummed out because he didn't have a girl that he was, like, messing around with. So he got to be the third wheel one more time. but anyway, so when they went to give the Kevin Bacon factoids, they played the scene of Kevin Bacon and his girlfriend having sex. Camera pans up. It's still the dead body, but Fritz's face has been superimposed on the corpse. And so that was how Fritz delivered his lines, as an example of like the kind of humor and stuff that they play along with. So that was that really was good to cap off a very troubling week, in a sense of like just work related nonsense. So for the last like 8-9 years, I have worked in downtown Columbus, which has been phenomenal. I love being downtown. I'm right around the corner from the Capitol building, like right around the corner from the Capitol building. I am in the hustle and bustle. I have seen protests. I have seen a man try to commit suicide. I have seen the bomb squad robot blow up a suspicious duffel bag. I have seen homeless people masturbating on the sidewalk. It is fucking wild living and like working downtown. I love it to death. It is 4 miles from where I live. It is a 20-minute bus ride, and it's perfect. And I got a reminder of that because in these clips of Fritz from the 1970s and 80s, there was, like, you would see, like, pictures of the city from back then, and my building is there. You know, there's that brutalist cube that I work in. And it made me a little sad because my company sold the building to the city because the city is doing a revitalization project. And basically, they are going to be purchasing these corporate buildings, and they're going to be converting them into apartments and storefronts and stuff. Because downtown Columbus is kind of a ghost town after about 4 or 5 o'clock. You got to go up the road a little bit to the Short North District if you're going to really see anything interesting. Because like downtown itself, like a lot of the restaurants shut down. A lot of them do, for the most part, at least in the center hub of it. So anyway, we were notified that they're selling the building and that they're going to be moving us to a different location. This location is, to use a term I learned from a former coworker in another department, geographically undesirable for me. It is, instead of a 20-minute bus ride 4 miles down the road, it is now an hour-long bus ride that involves a transfer with a very narrow window of error. So I have to take one bus, a couple of stops, get off, wait at another stop for 10 minutes for the next bus to come. If I miss that bus, I have a half hour wait until the next one arrives because it's a crosstown bus. So if I manage to catch that bus within that 10-minute window, it is now a 45-minute to 50-minute ride across town, and that is not a lot of fun. And when I do get off on my stop, I have to walk a quarter of a mile to get to this new location. I had to do that on Monday and Tuesday this week because of some team meetings. And afterward, you know, I was going to talk to my manager about this anyway, because I'm like, hey, I don't mind working from a location. I just need it to work for me. You know, like, we still have the corporate tower. Like, can you find a cubby hole for me? I'll take a fucking chair and a table in the middle of the men's room. I really don't care. I was already going to have that conversation with her, but then Tuesday morning, the stop that I have to get on and wait for the transfer is a little sketchy. And by a little sketchy, I mean a man of the homeless persuasion, who, by the way, the homeless community in my neighborhood, fucking chill as shit. Those people are awesome. They're always really super, super cool, super friendly. I remember I had a very long conversation when I was intoxicated one night with a woman who, she asked somebody for money and they gave her a piece of birthday cake instead. And she was like, this has way too much butter in it. And it was like, you're a woman of very discerning taste, ma'am. I don't know if I would have critiqued a birthday cake at 2 o'clock in the morning, but you know what? You do you. Super chill environment. I love these people to death. This area, their community's a little rougher around the edges. And by rough around the edges, I mean a man approached me with a screwdriver that he proceeded to illustrate to me that he uses like a shiv and that I should stay away from him, which I informed him that I had no desire of messing with him. So then I really needed to have that conversation with my manager, because I'm not trying to go to work with a stab wound in a place I don't like. And I'm not even, like, I didn't even bring up the fact that if I miss the bus when I leave, it's an hour wait for the next one. That place sucks unless you drive. And, like, that's the problem with Columbus as a city. It's very big and it's very widespread. And the public transportation system here really sucks unless you're just going up and down the main road in town like I've been doing. So that was my work rant. because, you know, that was something that was on my mind, and just kind of seeing the my current building in the old Fritz footage just had me feeling away. Additionally, on Friday or on Tuesday, I got to really hang out and have a conversation with a coworker of mine who I don't see in person, but once a year, cause she works out of Detroit, and she reminds me of people from back home, and I love her for it. And it was just kind of being around that and kind of getting that, like, I have a very complicated relationship with Bluefield, West Virginia, where I am originally from. I don't necessarily like the people, but I like the mountains. I like all of the green, and I like the community that I grew up around in downtown Bluefield, where my brother and sister went to college and where I went to college. Like, that is a very warm and welcome place for me. And I get snippets of it every now and then, and it's always really nice. So I get to hang out and chat with her and just kind of get that feeling. And then we did some volunteer work for an organization called Level the Playing Field. They are located in several cities, so if you're listening to this, see if they have one in your area. It's a very good cause. Basically, it is a group that collects donated sports equipment and gear to give to schools that do not have the funding for sports programs, or for families who cannot afford to buy their kids equipment. I grew up in an athletic family. I played sports from the time I was like 5 until beginning of high school. And I was rebellious because, A, I didn't really like coaches telling me what to do. And I also had no interest in getting better. I was an art kid. I loved reading. I loved theater. And I was in a band. And, you know, like, listening to a grown man shout, you know, drills and shit at me was not fitting the motif for a punk kid. So, but anyway, I can tell you from firsthand experience with my family that cleats and pads and protectors and just, like, balls and stuff are so fucking expensive. And, like, it's a problem that I think, you know, and it's something that it has been addressed. I am not breaking new ground here, but we have an issue in this country with pricing people out of things. We are basically creating an environment where you can be too poor to experience things. I had a long conversation with somebody about the arts because theater tickets are very, very expensive. And it's sort of like a catch-22 situation where, because plays and ballets and operas, the tickets for them are so high priced, you have a community of people who will never see them. There are people out there who have never seen a ballet performance. They have never attended a theater performance. They've never seen an opera. And they never will, because it's expensive. And because it's expensive, they aren't going to take a chance on it and maybe find something they really like. So, you know, you have that on one hand, and on the other hand, you want to make sure that these people are compensated fairly. You know, artists and painters and dancers and singers and performers, like, it is not the friendliest profession on a wallet, for sure. So that's where, like, funding for these things are so important, and why donations are so important. Because we can't trust the government to allocate funds for that, when the government would rather, like, give a bunch of money to things that don't need it as much. In fact, have been getting tons of money for years and years and years and years and years, and they don't fucking need it. Not to name names in particular, but I think you probably know what I'm referring to. So because there's no funding for that, the cost goes on to the customer or the person who's trying to enjoy it, and it becomes, like I said, untenable. And because of that, you have people who are being priced out of it, and I think that's not fair. That's a real roundabout. To get on such a highbrow topic after talking about my love for terrible fucking horror movies, that's just funny to me. But yeah, level the playing field is kind of like that. Schools don't have a lot of money, especially if it's inner city schools. They don't have a lot of money for sports programs for kids, or the kids are from poor families and they can't participate. And it's sort of the same deal about the performing arts. There are kids who may never get to be on a team or participate in a sport they really want to because they can't afford to do it. And that's a shame, and that sucks. And this is an organization that helps with that. We spent 2 hours with them. I was talking to one of my coworkers about potentially going back just because of it was a good environment. You know, there was one guy and an intern from OSU running that shit, and they just had the best environment. And we did like 4 bins of sorting and cataloging. And when we got done, he said, you know, you guys have done me a great deal of service because that would have taken me 4 to 5 weeks. So I guess if there's going to be a takeaway from this, donate your time and or money if you can. We live in a really interesting time where it feels like people are getting dumber, and that's not good. And I think a lot of that has to do with people being priced out of experiences or made to feel that certain things are not for them. And I will tell you, I'm someone who frequently struggles with this idea that certain things are not for me. And it's difficult to combat against that, because what it does is it limits your perspective, and it limits your sense of self-worth. And that's not good. It's really not. So if I could, like I said, donate your time, donate your money if you can. Try to help out, because it's always important to do that. You help out when you can. That's if anything you can take away from Superman, it's that. Help when you can. If we want to circle back to horror movies and stuff, I will tell you, not only do I love 80s slasher films, I love these Adam Age giant monster, giant insect movies from the 50s. I also really, really, really love the Universal monsters from the 1930s and 40s. I have a tattoo of Boris Karloff's Frankenstein because of how much of an impact just that image had on me as a kid. You know, because we're getting close to October, so start thinking about your scary stuff, right? Do it. I just saw Alien Romulus a couple of weeks ago, and it was amazing. I'm probably going to go see Beetlejuice at some point soon, and that's going to be fun, too, because Michael Keaton is goddamn phenomenal, and I'm glad that man's having a career resurgence over the last, like, 10 years, because he deserves it, because he's great. Underrated performance. He was in a movie version of Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, where he played Dogberry. Check that out. He's basically Beetlejuice, but citing Shakespearean prose. It's amazing. So that's going to do it for us here on the Large Old Cup, this late night edition, this Night Owl edition. I hope you're being recklessly brave and delusionally confident. You know, enjoy, sleep tight, good groovers. Have a good one. Bye.